Prospect Marcelo Meyer might break camp as a starting second baseman of the Red Sox, while that Vaughn Grissom deal looks worse and worse by the day. Yes, welcome on in to First Pitch for Thursday, March 20th, your source of news, notes, and updates on Major League Baseball. I'm your host, Lindsey Crosby. You can follow me on Twitter at Crosby Baseball. He's Troy Brock, Troy B Baseball on the Twitter machine. You can get every episode of the podcast, firstpitchpodcast.com. I want to talk about who is a contender and who is not. There was a really interesting tier list put up by MLB.com where they put all 30 teams into one of nine tiers. Got thoughts on it. I want to talk about what somebody called the NBAification of Major League Baseball. But let's talk about Boston, because they've had an interesting spring, right? A lot of the comments that were not great after Alex Bregman was signed, about is Rafi Devers going to move off of third base, go to DH, first base, whatever. It appears a lot of that's been resolved. Alex Bregman's played almost exclusively third base so far this spring. Devers has been DHing and things like that. And some interesting news coming out of their camp this week is that Marcelo Meyer, one of their top prospects, might break camp as the starting second baseman on opening day. This is obviously a team that has had a revolving door at second base. They haven't really been able to figure out who's going to be their second baseman. And are you in or out on the idea of Marcelo Meyer breaking camp as the starting second baseman and finding a way to get one of those three top prospects of them in the lineup on opening day?
I don't have any doubt that Marcelo Meyer will be a contributor at the major league level at some point in his career for the Boston Red Sox. My only issue is that he has not had any real playing time at the AAA level so far in his career. The most playing time he's had at the highest level so far has come at AA. And he is a top prospect, and he could contribute and be a big... contributor as early as this year. Is just I'm not big on guys being rushed to the major league level, even when they are top prospects, because if you rush a guy and you rush their development, it could ruin them. And you know, we kind of talked about the Phillies ruining Scott Kingery yesterday, and that was a little bit different of a situation than this one. But it's just you want your top prospects to get enough playing time at each level through the minor leagues to kind of prepare them for that major league level. And it's so far he's played the highest he's played the most is double A. And so it would be rushing him to have him on the opening day roster right now.
Yeah. It's it's something where he's had injuries in all three minor league seasons, right? He was taken in 2021 in the first round, number 4 overall, right? 2022, he plays in 91 games because of, I had the note here, it was wrist and back issues, okay? 2023, he gets 78 games. He starts off in high A, he goes to double A, 43 games in double A, doesn't do well, 189. And then his season stops because of a shoulder issue. And then last year, 77 games in double A Portland. And to be frank, I mean, very good. 307 batting average, right? You know, and he gets promoted to AAA and then almost immediately goes on the IL with a lumbar strain and never actually gets into games. Yep. We've seen some teams call guys up from AA and it be successful. The Atlanta Braves called Michael Harris straight from AA to the majors. They called Spencer Swellenbach straight from AA to the majors. But It's odd when you have this many second base options, right? You've got David Hamilton. You've got like Romy Gonzalez. They just optioned Vaughn Grissom down. We'll get to him in a minute. And they have another top prospect in Christian Campbell, who actually is a second baseman, to have Marcelo Meyer, who's really a shortstop, to have him on the opening day roster at second base. I actually went back and checked. in the game logs for his time in the minors, he's never played second base.
Wow.
He has 240 defensive starts in the minors. 238 of them are at short, and two of them are at third. So he's never played second base until spring. And to break camp as the starting second baseman, having not only never played second base professionally until spring training, and having never played AAA, feels like it's a recipe for him to struggle and get sent down after just a couple weeks. Now, I will say, obviously, they have a lot of options for second base, and they could always go back to that plan they discussed of putting Bregman at second and Devers back at third. Doesn't help your defense any, but like they could do that. And I'm sure he would, like, I'm sure Meyer can, he's a shortstop. He'll be fine at second base. It's just, it feels like two risks. When if you did one of those things, it'd be risky, but you could see it working out. But doing two of them is a lot.
Yeah, for sure. And you know, to your point from the beginning when you were leading into this conversation, second base has been a revolving door for the Red Sox since Dustin Pedroia. Since he retired, they really have not had a second baseman. And he retired, I think his last season in the majors was 2018. So it's been quite some time since they've had a viable second baseman. And then, you know, to kind of play devil's advocate, even with myself, Marcelo Meyer doesn't really have if Trevor Story stays healthy, Marcelo Meyer doesn't have a path through the majors this year because he's
that's a gonna, big if though.
That is a big if. I mean, if it were me, because knowing Trevor Story's injury history, especially during his time with the Red Sox, put Marcelo Meyer in AAA for 2 weeks. Trevor Story will be hurt by then, miss the rest of the season. Then you can call Marcelo Meyer up to play shortstop, and you can have David Hamilton play second base or even Christian Campbell. Christian Campbell got some time at AAA last year. And
how do you really feel about Trevor Story?
I'm a hater, man. I don't think you want to ask me that. I am a hater, so I'm going to just leave it at that.
I don't know if I've made it clear throughout the life of this podcast, but I really don't like when players are hurt more often than they're not.
Yeah, I can tell.
I don't care how good they are when they're not hurt, if they're hurt more often than they're not. And that goes for Mike Trout as well. I'm off the Mike Trout train until he shows me that he can play a full 100, even 140 games again. But regardless, it's a rough situation that the Red Sox are in. They have all these top prospects, and they also have guys at the major league level that are kind of blocking them. And also, real quick, the last time that they had a prospect jump directly from the AA level to the major league level was 2016. It was Andrew Benintendi.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
So that might play into their decision factor as well with how that turned out.
Well, I wanted to get kind of an idea of how bad the revolving door was for Boston at second base. Last year, I just looked at last year. I didn't have time for all everybody. Just last year, they played 11 different players at second base.
God.
Nobody had more than 56 games. And they had four different guys who made less than 10 starts there. But they played 11 different players. For context, they only used 13 different starting pitchers. Like, they almost used as many starters, or almost as many second basemen as they use starters.
That's insane.
And the worst part of that, those 11 players at second base combined to hit 200.
Wow.
With a 533 OPS. It was by far the worst position on the team. The next lowest batting average on the team was 238 at first base, and that at least came with 20 home runs. So, like, they got nothing from their second baseman last year, and they used 11 of them. And I think that's probably the impetus here is, like, yeah, they have a bunch of second basemen. None of them are good. And that's why they had to go with – that's why they're going looking at going with the top prospect. Because at least there's potential to be good there, right? A guy that doesn't, I'm not going to say doesn't have potential to be good, but wasn't good since he's been in Boston. And it turns out maybe this wasn't a good trade. was Vaughn Grissom. He was optioned to AAA. I believe this is his third and final option year. Correct me if I'm wrong. I think this is his final kind of opportunity to stick. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe he has one left. I'm not quite sure. But either way, this is a situation where not only has he not been good in Boston, he was hurt multiple times last year, got in 31 games, hit 190 with a 465 OPS. And the flip side of this is when he debuted for Atlanta at age 21, which I believe was actually also out of Double A, he hit in 41 games, he hit 291 with a 792 OPS. That's the hard part, is he was so good for Atlanta in 22, not defensively, but offensively at second base. And he's been so bad. He was so bad defensively for Atlanta at short in 23, and then so bad at all for Boston last year. But people forget that deal was not Vaughn Grissom for Chris Sale. That deal was Vaughn Grissom for Chris Sale and Chris Sale's entire 2024 salary. The Boston Red Sox paid Chris Sale to win a Cy Young for somebody else, while Vaughn Grissom hit 190 over 31 games and couldn't make the roster out of spring training this year. There is a lesson to all of this.
At the end of the day, if you don't like it, play better.
I had that video in here and I had to use it because that is Vaughn Grissom talking about not getting Atlanta's starting shortstop job. And that was the message that Ron Washington gave him when he was bummed about not being the starting shortstop. And Ron Washington said, if you don't like it, play better. Let's go.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's spot on. I'm glad you played that. I had it queued up. I was going to put it in there if you didn't, but, nice. It's been a wild ride for Vaughn Grissom, and you got to imagine just how bad it's got to feel for him that, you know, the Red Sox did make that trade and paid all of Chris Sale's salary to go to the Atlanta Braves and win a National League Triple Crown and the National League Cy Young. It's we talk about Moneyball a lot, and we play that he gets on base clip a lot, but it's kind of like when Billy Beane was in the batting cages talking to David Justice, and David Justice is having an attitude, and he's like, you don't pay me to be a leader. You pay me to be good, or whatever the quote was. And Billy Beane says, nah, I don't pay you. The Yankees pay half your salary. And so it's Alex Anthopoulos is underneath in the bullpen telling Chris Sale, nah, I don't pay you. The Red Sox pay your salary. But it's one of the worst, one of the most lopsided trades so far. It has turned out to be one of the most lopsided trades in the sport just because of how it has turned out. And nobody expected it to be that way. Like
it was a salary double sale.
Yeah. And just how injury riddled Chris Sale had been during his time with the Red Sox and throughout his career. And he went to the pitching factory in Atlanta and figured out how to do things a little bit better and how to stay healthy. And we saw what can happen. And, but Vaughn Grissom, man, if he comes back up to the major leagues this year at some point for the Red Sox, I think that it will be very telling how the rest of his career will go. If he doesn't get it together, if he has another stint at the major leagues this year and he does not get it together, I think that it will be his last stint in the major leagues, at least on a team that is has somewhat of a chance of contending. Like, he might be a White Sox player or something, but his stint with the Red Sox in the majors would be done, as well as any other contender.
Yeah, I mean, he's too talented to just give up on, but he'd be in that situation where he had failed with two different teams to stick. And it would be a lot of minimum salary deals and non-guaranteed stuff. And he probably would need to work on learning maybe an outfield spot or something, you know, try to increase his versatility, because he's not an MLB caliber shortstop. He's not. It's just, no, he's not. And so, yeah, it's tough there. Okay. Before we get into this contender tier thing, there was an interesting tweet that you sent me the other day, and somebody talked about Major League Baseball is turning Ohtani into what the NBA did to LeBron and the NFL did to Tom Brady. Maybe instead of just, you know, kind of shoving him down our throats, let people enjoy his greatness. We don't need 900 posts a day about him from national media outlets. How do you feel about Shohei Ohtani and the amount of attention that he gets versus the rest of the league?
Shohei Ohtani is great. There is no doubt about that. Shohei Ohtani is great. He is one of the best players in Major League Baseball, and he's won three MVPs throughout his career, including in 2024. But Major League Baseball also acts like he is the only player in the sport with how they cover him. I mean, we even saw it yesterday. They were in Japan, and throughout the whole Tokyo series, really, every single opportunity that they got, Shohei Ohtani was on the screen. He'd be sitting in the dugout, just leaned up against the wall, not doing anything interesting. And they're like, oh, look, there's Shohei Ohtani. And he hit a quote-unquote home run that a fan reached over the wall for, over the wall. It was not going out. It was going to hit the top of the wall. And they reviewed it, an umpire review. Like, the other team didn't even challenge it. And they still called it a home run. Like, and it's just, there's a lot that plays into it. And I saw that tweet. I sent it to you because I understand his greatness. I understand Tom Brady's greatness. And I respect Tom Brady's greatness a lot more now that he is retired than I did when he was in the NFL. And I understand LeBron James's greatness and how he is, in fact, the greatest basketball player in the history of the sport. But I also understand that you have to be better at promoting the rest of your league. Like, Mike Trout never got this treatment. I didn't really pay attention to baseball when Barry Bonds was a thing, but he probably never got this treatment. Mark McGwire probably never got this treatment, and Bryce Harper's never got this treatment. It's they are focusing in on one player and trying to promote one player instead of trying to bring the entire sport up. And it's just, I don't get it. And I know that a lot of people, and I know that we've been very Dodgers heavy this week. We've talked about the Dodgers all week. All of our thumbnails, which I have made this week, have been the Dodgers. And I'm pretty sure one of them was Shohei. But it does get eyes on it. The Dodgers are a big market, but it's just, they have to do better with promoting the rest of Major League Baseball instead of just Shohei Ohtani.
Yeah, I think if there's any week that you'd be Shohei heavy, it's the week you're in Japan when there's no other actual games that matter. But I do agree, he does get a lot of attention. The biggest thing to me that's been surprising is how when he moved from the Angels to the Dodgers, a lot of the coverage was weirdly like welcome to LA kind of stuff. And I'm like, he's lived here for 7 years?
He walked across the street.
Yeah, I mean, there were different parts of LA, but like,
right.
Like there was something about, like, you know, him taking a trip to the Staples Center and it was like, welcome Shohei. And I'm like, he's been in LA. He lived here. He probably didn't have to buy a new house when he changed teams. Like, what are we doing? I do think that in a probably controversial opinion that will have to be debated on a different show, Shohei Ohtani may be the greatest baseball player in MLB history, simply because of his ability to do both things at such a high level at the same time. We've never seen it at the same time to the level that he does it. And I understand the idea of promoting that. And I understand the idea of when you're in Japan doing the Japan series, when literally like a third of the country is watching, putting him on the screen as much as possible. I get that. I do feel like it's a lot of the promotion of Shohei is a lot of other brands and other, you know, whether it's content creators, whether it's the league or whatever, but we're not actually learning about Shohei. It's a lot of like, hey, look at this thing he did, or hey, here's him doing this thing. But it's not like you have to dig to learn like the story of Shohei. None of it's teaching us about why he's so great. None of it's teaching us about how he manages his time able to do these things. It's just, hey, look at Shohei. And I do think that it could be done better. right? We could be doing more with Shohei Ohtani than just putting Shohei in our face and being done with it, right? So I do kind of see that guy's point, and I do kind of get it. I do think there's more nuance there, but still, that would be fun.
I do wish we had that little graphic we could put up on the screen. Shohei Ohtani, three batters away.
Just leave it in the bottom corner during the show. Like, Shohei Ohtani, 2 segments away. We're going to talk about Shohei Ohtani. All right. Final thing I want to get to here is MLB.com had a tier list of, I believe, was this all 30 teams?
Yep, all 30.
All 30. They put them into one of 9 different tiers. And I wanted to kind of real quick vibe check how we thought about this thing. So tier 1, the Dodgers by themselves. Does it make sense that they're on a tier separate from everybody else right now?
I mean, I get it. It might be biased. I get it, but I don't think I would put them by themselves. I think I would have some of those teams in tier 2 up there with them.
Okay.
Specifically the Braves and Phillies, but I do get the Dodgers being up there by themselves.
Speaking of tier 2, tier 2 is World Series or bust, that the only goal for these teams should be winning the whole thing. Braves, Mets, Orioles, Phillies, Yankees. My thoughts real quick is the Yankees, that should be their goal, but talent-wise, they should not be in there. I don't think that that's a top half of the league lineup or rotation after Gerrit Cole and Luis Gil's injuries.
Yeah, 100% agree with you. It's Aaron Judge and the boys and Max Fried and the boys, and so it's not a good roster with all the injuries.
Yeah, Orioles are probably the next team out of that, but Braves, Mets, Phillies, boy, the National League East is going to be murder this year.
It's going to be fun.
Tier 3, better than you might think, is 4 non-playoff teams from 24 that might be a little underrated. Cubs, Diamondbacks, Rangers, Red Sox. 100% of the Diamondbacks. I'm on board with that. They had a great offense. They added Corbin Burns. Like, they're underrated. Cubs, sure, okay. They added Kyle Tucker. Rangers, if they get Texas DeGrom health, keep him healthy, maybe. Red Sox, I get it. They're the Cubs of the American League, right? A team that should spend a lot more money than they do and should win a lot more than they do in a super old ballpark, right? Like, they're not any different from the Cubs. The Cubs and the Red Sox are the same team, just different uniforms.
Yeah. Pretty much spot on with all of that.
Really good farm systems.
Yeah, it's not going to surprise me if all 4 of those teams are in the playoffs, especially with what they've done and then what has gone on around them. But I do agree that I think the Cubs are going to be the central winner, and then the Diamondbacks are also pretty good. And I do think the Rangers aren't going to miss out on the playoffs again this year. The only one that's questionable for me is the Red Sox.
Yeah, I think the Red Sox have so much talent, including guys going to come back off the IL for the rotation, that they could do it easily. They could win the East. The AL East is wide open after the Yankees injuries. Who knows?
Yeah.
All right. Tier 4, a healthy middle class, good, not great teams that should be contenders. Giants, Mariners, Padres, Rays, Reds, Royals, Tigers, and Twins. Okay. Minnesota's been the weird one to me, because they were like not good last year, but I feel like they have one of the better rosters in that division, including your favorite player, Byron Buxton. The Mariners and Rays don't spend money, right? They have, Mariners have an amazing pitching staff and added nothing to the lineup. The Rays just don't spend money ever. Both have weird ballpark situations too. Giants and Padres perpetually behind the Dodgers and probably the Diamondbacks too. Reds, have a bunch of exciting players and just haven't all put it together. I don't think I hate any of those placements in that tier, in tier 4, right?
I don't like the Giants in that tier. I don't think they're there yet. And I think the Tigers are going to take a step back this year from what they did last year. But the rest of it, I think, is pretty spot on. I do like the Reds up there. I think they're going to be better than people expect. And then the Padres are always good. Oh, and I also don't like the Mariners there. Just because, as you pointed out, while they have one of the best rotations in baseball, they did nothing to improve their offense. And so,
if I was redoing this, I would have a tier that I just called Broke Boys. and I'd put the Mariners in there with the Pirates and the teams that just won't spend money. Right. Like, the Mariners should have added a bat. There's no question they should have added the bat.
Yeah, they should have been hardcore in on Juan Soto.
Yeah, they should have added more than one bat, and they just never did.
No.
All right, tier five, time comes for us all. The Astros and the Blue Jays. You cannot find two different franchises right now than the Astros and Blue Jays. The Astros, 7 division titles, won a World Series, played in multiple. The Blue Jays haven't won a playoff game in a decade. Like, you could not find two separate, different teams. So to put them in the same tier is wild. But the point MLB was making was it's like the end of a core, right? Houston lost Bregman. They've lost, you know, Verlander. Kyle Tucker's gone. All of that kind of stuff. Altuve's getting up there in age. Whereas the Blue Jays, Vlad Guerrero, Bo Bichette are going to both be free agents. Chris Bassett, Max Scherzer can all walk after this year. George Springer and Kevin Gausman can walk the next year. You could have a lot of turnover on this Toronto team, just like you had with the Astros and will continue to have in the next couple of years with the Astros. Does this placement make sense putting them together?
I get why they did it, and you laid it out. I get why they did it. They are very different. Whenever I first saw it, before I read their explanation, I was like, why are these two teams?
If you don't know why the tier is designed that way, it makes no sense.
Exactly.
It makes zero sense. Like, the Blue Jays could be fifth place in that division, and I would not bat an eye. The Astros have won that division almost every year in, like, the last decade. And they don't make sense to be on the same bucket, but when you think of it that way about continuity, you see it
right.
This next one is the funniest to me. Tier six is eventually we'll stop underrating them. Brewers and Guardians. I am not going to stop underrating those teams because, and I've said this before, especially with the Brewers, they somehow keep doing it. They traded Corbin Burns, they traded Devin Williams, they let Willie Adames leave, and they've just been able to, like, Brandon Woodruff was hurt, and they just keep plugging along and winning division titles. And every year we're like, is this the year that somebody else is going to win? And now we all think this is the year that someone else is going to win. And we're going to look up in September and they're going to be 2 games up with 5 to play. And we're going to be like, they did it again. But I just can't.
Don't forget, the Cubs have Kyle Tucker now.
For only this season and no others. They're not going to resign, and we all know that. All right. Does Kyle Tucker go to the Dodgers or the Mets? Which would be more annoying next offseason, by the way? Dodgers or Mets?
I mean, for us specifically, I think it would be more annoying if he was a Met, especially after they signed Juan Soto. But as far as MLB as a whole goes, it'd be the Dodgers.
There you go. All right. And then the Guardians. Like, okay, they just – the rotation, like – they went from the rotation being a strength to the bullpen being a strength. The offense still hasn't been good. Like, they're not, it's not going to happen. Whatever. Tier seven, there's interesting baseball to be had here. The A's, the Nationals, the Pirates. Are the Pirates exciting outside of Paul Skeens?
No.
Like, Jared Jones is probably out for the year. He has an elbow issue getting a second opinion. Like, like Bubba Chandler, he's an exciting pitching prospect. O'Neal Cruz in center field is fun to watch because he's fast with a big arm. But, like, 3 dudes and 2 of them won't play in the same game does not make that an exciting roster, like, exciting baseball to watch. I'll watch a Paul Skeen start. I probably won't watch any other Pirates games this year unless they're playing my team.
Right. Oh, yeah. The only Major League Baseball game that I attended last year was specifically to see Paul Skeen start against the Atlanta Braves. But when you look at this tier, one of these things is certainly not like the other, and it's the Pittsburgh Pirates.
Again, we need a tier called Broke Boys to just put the Pirates into. All right. Tier eight. What's the direction here? Angels and Cardinals. I would argue it makes sense that they're both in there because we have questions about, like, are you contending or rebuilding? But I think the difference is the Cardinals literally don't know what they're trying to do. The Angels know what they're trying to do. They're just bad at it. The Angels want to contend. They're just not good at, like, the front office ownership management stuff. The Cardinals literally don't know what they want to do. Do they want to rebuild? Do they want to shed the contracts but they kept a bunch of the veterans. Like, I don't think they know what they want to do. This is also the weirdest thing because they have a new president of baseball operations in waiting in Chaim Bloom, who came from the Red Sox. He's working under John Mozeliak, who's in the final year of his contract. It's a weird deal. I wonder if there was something in there about, like, Bloom wouldn't let Mozeliak ditch all those guys. Like, I'm going to trade them next year. Like, I wonder if that was a thing. I don't know. It's weird.
That's an interesting way to look at it. But, yeah, I do think that these teams, I kind of get them being in the same tier, but I do think they're on two different trajectories. Even though the Angels don't have a good front office and they're one of the worst run teams in baseball, this season specifically, I think the Angels are more on the upswing than the Cardinals, and the Cardinals are more on the downswing.
Yeah. All right, tier nine. Eventually next year will be this year. Marlins, Rockies, and White Sox. Bro, like, at least the Rockies are trying. They just have, like, I mean, they do some dumb contracts. Yeah. Chris Bryant deal was an awful deal. But, like, they've got some interesting pieces. Brenton Doyle, Ezekiel Tovar. I like Nolan Jones. That outfield has, like, the greatest combination of outfield arms in baseball right now.
But yeah, it's crazy.
Miami's just a disaster.
Yeah.
And Chicago, the White Sox, are also a disaster.
Yeah, I think this is the tier that's probably the most spot on. It's just putting these three teams together. But it's going to be crazy because of how crazy the American League Central is when the White Sox turn around and win the division this year. Like, I've kind of thought about that the past couple of days. As bad as they were last year, literally the worst team in the history of Major League Baseball, and they turn around and win the division this year just because of how much of a crapshoot the American League Central is.
Yeah. It's one of those, like, at least the White Sox have sent out everything that's not nailed down. Like, Garrett Crochet's, like, they've traded almost everything but Eloy. They've traded everything else. The Marlins didn't have much to trade. They traded everything but Sandy, right? It's like the Rockies are in that. The Rockies almost kind of belong with, like, the Angels and Cardinals thing of, like, they're trying. They're just not good. Like, the Marlins aren't trying. The White Sox aren't trying. At least the Rockies are trying, and they'll spend money, which for me puts them above the Pirates because they're at least trying to spend money too. They're just not very good. I don't know.
Yeah,
it's weird.
Yeah, it's the Rockies are another one of those teams that are worst run in baseball. And for the White Sox, it was Lou Bob. They did trade Eloy at the trade deadline.
Oh, I'm sorry, Lou Bob. That's right. That's right.
But yeah, it's definitely going to be fun to see how many games these three teams can lose this year if they can flirt with that record that the White Sox set last year or not. But they
do those three teams combine for 125 wins?
Ooh, that's a fun one.
I was trying to find a good number. I feel like that's too low.
That's a good question. I do think that is a little too low. I think the Rockies and Marlins just barely lost 100 games each last year, and I think they do combine for 125 wins. I think that 160 might be a little more out of the question for the three teams combined, but
that's probably a better number. Yeah.
But it's going to be rough for those three fan bases this year. If fans even exist for those teams anymore, I'm not sure.
So, all right. This has been First Pitch for Thursday, March 20th. If you're listening on audio, do us a favor. Leave us a 5-star review. If you're on YouTube, subscribe to the channel. Hit the notification bell. Maybe also leave us a 5-star review and send your friends to firstpitchpodcast.com. Until next time, this has been First Pitch.